Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Katie Hannon sitting in for Joe. Brian, good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you?
Brian, I believe you would count yourself as a regular church goer, but you weren't able to bring yourself to go to Mass over Christmas. Can you tell us why?
So basically, on the morning, on Christmas morning, my sister-in-law sent me a message on Viber to show me a message that had been put up on Facebook the evening before by the Tullamore Parish. The Facebook, I found the post was quite offensive. I felt it was an attack on parents of IVF children, particularly on mothers of IVF children. And I felt that, you know, the church should really stay out of, you know, mother and child related issues, to be honest.
Just to explain to people, Brian, who mightn't have come across this post, because it did cause a bit of controversy. I just have a screenshot of it here in front of me. It opened, "Let us continue to pray for life. We pray for couples who are struggling to naturally conceive and who are avoiding IVF treatment." And then it goes on to explain that IVF damages embryonic stem cells and thus life, and is therefore completely, clearly and totally incompatible with our Catholic faith, and for all believers in God, all life is sacred at all times. So it goes on to more issues about life and unborn persons and all that, but that's basically the nub of it, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
What was it about that?
Particularly the morning that was in it, I suppose we have been, you know, I've been through with my wife 12 years of like an IVF journey. So we've been through 12 Christmases without children in our house. We kind of knew how hard it was on that particular morning to have no children in our house and kind of be going through the issues we were going through. And I suppose my answer to them, or my subsequent post to them, was kind of, you know, in defense of that, because at the end of the day, you know, I think it's hard enough to kind of face into a morning like Christmas morning with no children in your house.
When you desperately want to have children.
When you desperately want children, yeah. And I think the answer I got was even more offensive, to be honest. And I think that's when a lot of people kind of jumped on and said, look, this is not acceptable. You know, the answer I got was, well, don't sin if you want, you know, don't become a sinner if you're looking for forgiveness or something like that.
So you actually responded to this post on the Tullamore Parish Facebook page,
yeah.
And you got that response?
I got that response, yeah.
Did you have it there with you? What exactly did it say?
I don't, because again, the actual post was deleted from Facebook before the actual page itself was deleted from Facebook.
But your sense of what it said was, if you don't want to be...
Yeah, if you don't want to be forgiven for your sins, don't sin in the first place.
Right. We should say, of course, that ultimately, because there was a furore about this, that this post, the initial post about IVF, was deleted and a statement was issued on Monday. I'll just read out a couple of lines of that statement, just to be fair to the Tullamore Parish people. It acknowledges a post published on the Tullamore Parish Facebook page on Christmas Eve concerning IVF has caused great distress to many members of our parish community and beyond. For hurt caused, we apologise. Matters concerning fertility are sacred and sensitive, and all children are cherished and God-given. This is the essence of the Christmas message. The parish understands the great suffering experienced by mothers and fathers who long for a child. At this time, we offer our pastoral and prayerful support to all parents and expectant parents. And that's signed, Tullamore Parish team. Now, that's definitely in a very different tone than the initial response you received, Brian.
Absolutely, yeah. I think, look, you know, there's a lot of kind of revulsion from people on Facebook over a number of days looking for a response, and no response came from anybody, you know. And then, you know, I myself rang the parish parochial house with no answer from the phone and so on, you know. So, like, you know, I think they kind of went to ground, realised that obviously this had caused massive, you know, kickback, and then decided then to put out a post, which again is totally at odds with what they had said originally.
I suppose, to be fair to them, Brian, we have to be fair to everyone. It is a very busy time of the year. There's a lot of extra church activity around those few days around Christmas. But just so we get the timeline right, the post was put up, as we understand it, on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
When did you respond yourself to that post online?
On Christmas morning.
And when did you get the response suggesting that you're not sin if you didn't want to be forgiven for your sins?
Within a matter of minutes.
Oh, so there was somebody on the page at that time.
Yeah.
And did that stay up for some time then?
Yeah, it did. I think it was probably about 2 days later before the actual whole post was taken down. And then a number of days after that, obviously, people were still kind of writing recommendations for the page. And then the whole page was taken down that evening, I think. So this could have been even the day after Stephen's Day.
Yeah, I think the statement I have, it tells me that it was Monday when they issued the statement that I read out there about pastoral support and prayerful support for all parents. Just go back there. You mentioned, and you said 12 years, Brian, that you were on your journey. Just take us back. And presumably you had been trying to conceive for some time even before that.
Yeah, I suppose, look, in total we're talking about 12 years. We kind of went down the NAPRO route, first of all, which is kind of the natural way, which is, I think, is kind of what is recommended by the Catholic Church. It's called the Creighton model.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did 2 years of IUI, which is, again, was the kind of, anybody who's familiar with AI would know what IUI means. And then we have 8 years of IVF. I suppose we went outside the country, first of all. We went to England, did 3 rounds of IVF there.
Was that because, just for Fernando, because apart from the emotional toll this all takes, of course, because it's incredibly expensive business.
It is. I suppose we went to the UK because we had researched, the best clinic in Europe was in the UK at the time, and that's where we decided we wanted to go, because obviously we felt we'd have a better chance there.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife did get pregnant on the first round of IVF, and unfortunately at our 3 month scan we were told the baby had died, and obviously she went through a horrific miscarriage that lasted for about 2 weeks. And we picked ourselves up from that. We went through another 2 rounds in the UK, came back, did several rounds in Ireland, and finally we went to Prague, the Czech Republic, where it actually worked, you know.
So that was what, your seventh round of IVF?
Yeah, seventh round of IVF, yeah. Yeah.
That is an extraordinary thing to put, not just to put your body through, but as I say, emotionally, that is a huge.
Yeah, it is. It's hugely emotional, I suppose. And each time it doesn't work, it's like, going through that miscarriage all over again, particularly hard on my wife. And I suppose, look, in the end, when it worked, we're very lucky to have a positive story of IVF, because for so many couples, it doesn't work,
So you have twin girls now?
Twin girls, yeah.
And what age are they now, Brian?
They're 2.5.
Right. So, incredible, very happy ending to that very
absolutely
long journey.
Yeah.
But as you say, you're aware, you've a sense that a lot of people don't have that happy ending, even they put themselves through years of IVF.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose that post on that day kind of just stirred something in me. And I obviously then wanted to, in defense of those people who it never works for, or who are still in the middle of their journey or starting their journey, to have this kind of negativity around that. On that particular day, for me, was just, an annoyance,
Was it a big decision for you not to go to Mass at Christmas?
Yeah, it was, because, again, we would be regular churchgoers. And I suppose, I know some people will say, well, look, the teachings of the church are IVF is not, compatible with them, with the teachings of the church. But, at the end of the day, I don't seek morality from anybody, I make my own decisions in life. And the decision for me was to go through the rounds of IVF that we went through, as it was my wife.
Did you have any qualms about that as a regular churchgoer, knowing the Catholic doctrine on IVF is pretty clear, I think. Did you have any qualms personally about that?
I suppose, yeah. Look, not that we had any qualms about it, but I suppose we did try to go down the NAPRO route, which is the Creighton model, which is kind of within the Catholic Church's kind of ethos, that they kind of encourage you to go this way.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of wasn't because of the Catholic Church that we did that. It was just, that was kind of the route we went at the start. It didn't work for us. So at the end of the day, I don't think there's anybody that would be standing in my shoes that wouldn't have done what I did or what we did, At the end of the day, we wanted children. And we would have done what we had to do to get our children. And I think by virtue of the fact that we went through 12 years of hurt and pain to get here, I think that just proves it,
Will you go back to church again? I mean, was that just a once-off kind of protest?
Well, for me, it's about, I'm a believer in God. And I think the church and God are two separate things nowadays, to be honest, because I think if you look back on the history of the church in Ireland and all the things that they've done, I think that is a lot of the reason why people are turning their backs on the church. I will never turn my back on my religion. I will continue to go back to church, but I do have issues with the way the church conducts its own duties, you know.
Yeah, well, like, were you surprised that this attitude is still? Aren't you? Do you wonder? Is there an issue about couples who you know resort to IVF and have their children through IVF? Do you think there is an issue in wider society about judgment about that?
I think there is. To be fair, I think you know, and I don't want to be kind of ageist or anything, but I think in the older generations there probably is a sense of, you know, they don't understand the whole process of IVF. And so I suppose some of the things that have been said to us over the years, but we kind of laugh at that because I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, we understand we wouldn't have leaped into this without, you know, understanding the whole process from start to finish.
Like when you say some of the things that have been said to you over the years?
I wouldn't even like to say because, you know, I wouldn't want to be offensive to anybody, but like there are people who have made some comments within the past, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But look, you know, you just take that with a pinch of salt. I at the end of the day, nobody would, if they had gone through what we had gone through, you know, not being able to have children and so on, you know, they would all have gone and done what we have done, you know.
And tell me, when you were going through that, I mean, you say you had that absolutely horrific experience with your first pregnancy, and then having to kind of pick yourself up and go back and start again. We know that it's a very rigorous regime you have to put yourself through, particularly your wife, with all the injections and the hormones and all the emotional toil, as I say. Was there any time during that, those, you know, where you thought, I just can't do this anymore, or your wife thought, this is just too much, we can't go on here?
No, because I think we always knew that it would work at some point, you know, and I even think, you know, the last round that we went through, when we went to Prague, we just knew that before we even did it, that this was the time it was going to work.
How did you keep the hope alive there?
I suppose, you know, through each round of IVF, we would have been quite, you know, reliant on our faith, to be honest, and we would have, you know, attended churches, lighting candles, all that sort of stuff. I know that might sound that it's at odds with what the Catholic teachings are, but I think, as I said earlier, your faith is, to me, a little bit different to the church at the moment. I have a faith. I don't really believe in the church at the moment, but I do still have my faith. And I think that's kind of what got us through it, to be honest. That and the fact that we would be a very strong couple anyway, and we would have always, even at the end of each IVF treatment when it didn't work and so on, we would have sat down, had our discussion together, and then put a plan in place for our next round and so on. So it kind of, that always kept us going, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose, and I don't want to ask any personal questions about your financial situation, but I mean, I know of many couples, and I've spoken to couples before, who would love to be able to do, you know, multiple rounds, but unfortunately, it's. Am I right in saying it's like 3,000 or 4,000 euro for a round in Ireland?
I think it's about, I think off recollection, it's about 5,000 per round in Ireland. But then obviously it gets more expensive with, you know, investigations. There was one particular blood test my wife had to have, which was 2,500 euro. You know, for one blood test, yeah. They had to go to Chicago and then they kind of do all these tests on it to find out what the issues are and so on. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, you learn a lot about yourself. Like I never knew that I was a carrier for cystic fibrosis until I started doing the IVF, because obviously you go through all these karyotype tests and stuff like that as well, you know. So.
Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I mean, obviously, because you have your two beautiful girls now, you absolutely believe that this is a journey that people should be able to go on.
Yeah, I think so. Like I think there's, you know, it's a long journey, it's tough, it's hard, and I just don't think that people need the kind of added, you know, negativity thrown in there by people who don't understand the process, to be honest. And it was very obvious from the post, because he starts to talk about stem cells and, like, I think he means embryos, to be honest, you know.
There's a bit slightly confused a line in the post that I have here in front of me. The process of IVF damages embryonic stem cells and thus life.
Look, I think there's a lack of understanding there, and I think, you know, sometimes if you don't understand something, maybe you should be better off to not comment on it in the first place.
Mind you, I suppose, to be fair to him, because we looked up, I was interested to see what is the Catholic position on IVF, the more general Catholic position, and I found an article from the Irish Catholic, is IVF morally permissible, which just goes through the the doctrine basically on it. And it says there's two reasons really. First, Catholics believe that human dignity is upheld in a sexual union of two people who conceive a child naturally, and that this interferes with that. And the second reason is that because life begins at conception, and so acts that infringe upon the dignity of this life are illicit. So for the IVF process to be effective, several human embryos are created and a majority of those are destroyed.
That's not exactly correct either, though. You know, like several of those may die naturally, as it has happened to us in the past. We would have gone, you know, maybe have 8 embryos, and by the very end of the process, you may have only 2 left because the rest haven't developed properly and so on, you know.
Which would happen naturally as well.
Naturally, absolutely, yeah. And we've never been in a situation where we've had to destroy embryos, you know.
Would that have, as a Catholic and because of the teaching, because it says, again, just to elaborate on that position in this article, embryos should be treated as individual persons with souls, and IVF undermines this. As a Catholic, would you have balked or had qualms about the destruction of embryos?
I suppose we've never had to think about it, and it's something I've never thought about, to be honest. Look, you know, I think we would have crossed that bridge when we came to it. Look, I kind of do believe, yes, that, you know, an embryo is life. You know, it's hard to answer, to be honest, you know.
Yeah. As you say, it wasn't a decision you had to take. Brian, will you stay with us? Because I want to go to Laura Woods. Good afternoon, Laura.
Hi, how are you?
Laura, Brian there, he had a very, very long journey, himself and his wife, 12 years. But he did ultimately, 2.5 years ago, it ended with the birth of his twin girls. You're also on this journey.
Yes, and I'm delighted for that caller. You know, I'm so happy for him that it all turned out well. My partner and I suppose, are on the cusp of our journey, really. We were told at the beginning of last year that we would not be able to conceive naturally. So the last year has really been, I suppose, mired by this journey, going through IVF and, I suppose, all the obstacles that go with it. And so to read this message then that was published on Christmas Eve, saying that prayers were being issued specifically for couples that were struggling to naturally conceive and who are avoiding IVF treatment, you know, the implication is that anyone else, you know, anyone who's deviating from this path and availing of medical science instead isn't included in the church's thoughts and prayers. They don't qualify. So I thought that was particularly, you know, devastating to read, and it feels like it's adding a blow to a couple who are already struggling emotionally, physically, mentally. It's one of the hardest things that we've ever had to go through. And I just like people to think about the anguish that you would go through if you were told you can never have a baby naturally with a person that you love so much and that you're committed to. It's devastating. And even the timing, as that previous caller said, the timing of the message seems particularly callous as well. And on Christmas Eve, at a time when, you know, you're reminded so much of the emptiness of your own household, you'd love to have children to share this experience with, to share Christmas with. I was pretty blown away just by the ignorance of it, really.
Laura, you sound like a young woman.
I'm fortunate enough that, you know, I suppose when we were told, we are quite young, and I think that's a misgiving as well about infertility, in that it only affects older couples, but it doesn't. You know, I just turned 30 when I was told that we had this issue. It's actually a male factor issue. So my partner was born with a congenital issue. He has this particular condition, which means that he'll never be able to conceive naturally because of this condition he has. But, you know, I suppose in some ways, fortunately, I am lucky in that I don't have any fertility issues myself. So I think that's something that needs to be dispelled. There's so many people that it affects, not just a particular cohort of people. You know, there's people that are going through cancer treatments that have their fertility affected, their genetic issues that can be involved. So there are a wide range of people that it can affect. And I suppose having talked to other people about it as well, I've talked to a few close friends, and there are other people that are it's actually quite a widespread issue nationwide. Just people aren't talking about it, I suppose.
I think that isn't the statistic something like 1 in 6 couples will struggle to conceive naturally.
Absolutely.
That is a lot. That's a lot of couples.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, and it's a very lonely journey to be going through. And I think a message like this only adds to the stigma. I think people are afraid to talk out about it. Because to hear, you know, to hear a message like that, it's not a journey that anyone would willingly go through. You know, I would challenge anyone to go through this with their partner and come out the other side unscathed. You know, mentally it has really affected me. Not to mention the physical aspects of the treatments, because, you know, even though it is a male factor issue, the woman is the one that has to go through all the hormone injections, as you said. You know, I'm on a forum with other women, you know, online, and there's some women that have been successful, perhaps, but have suffered miscarriages later on, and it's devastating, you know. And I just don't think it feels like a very isolating journey. You know, even for counselling, we had to pay for counselling ourselves. As the previous caller mentioned, it's very financially oppressive. You know, we've gone through one round, but it takes quite a blow. I mean, in fact, 5,000 is the minimum you would be spending. Because
is it now?
Talking,
yeah, 5,000 euro would be the minimum.
Minimum, yeah, because you're talking then about additional tests. You know, you'll have to go for an ultrasound to check that your fallopian tubes are okay. You'd have to go for blood tests. You know, I mean, we had to go for blood tests. There doesn't seem to be much regulation about it either, so you're kind of going along with what the clinic is recommending, but it's, you know, there's no objective body to consult to ask, look, is this, do I need this treatment, or do I need this test, is it just
well of course
test?
Yeah, the other issue, of course, is there is, we have no regulation of this area in this country as yet, even though I know there's been calls for it for decades now at this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. So you feel like, you know, you don't feel like there's anyone you can necessarily consult to check, am I doing the right thing? Do we necessarily need this test?
The mercy of the clinics, really, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And to be fair to the clinics, they are at the forefront of demanding proper regulation to be put in place. Certainly some of the bigger clinics involved in IVF from just seeing the news about this over the last number of years. But you say you've gone through one cycle, Laura, and obviously...
And we're still on the journey. Yeah.
You're still there, yeah.
Yeah.
But you are determined that you
absolutely.
will keep going.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very hard to put into words. It's just, it seems, you know, almost all-consuming. It's like an all-consuming urge. And then, you know, you're asked by other well-meaning people, of course, you know, when are you going to start having children? You know, it'd be lovely to give your parents a grandchild. And, you know, you're constantly coming up with different excuses. And I think it's necessary for people to bear that in mind, that, you know, just because a couple... are childless, you know, it's not necessarily voluntary, and I think people just need to perhaps have a bit of tact when they do ask other people, you know, just be careful
but sure
with how you word.
Whose business is it of anybody when you're going to give your parents a grandchild? Would you not? Fair play to you if you respond politely to those questions, because I do think that people are extraordinarily intrusive to in any way say anything about people's children or lack of children.
Yeah, well, you'd be surprised. just to mention as well, just coming back to the financial aspect, I think it's important to note as well that Ireland is only one of two countries in Europe that doesn't fund fertility treatments. So, I mean, we are lucky in that we've managed, you know, to get the money together, but I can't imagine how anyone else, you know, as you said, we're a relatively young couple in terms, you know, reproductively speaking, but there's plenty of other couples, you know, that are struggling to pay mortgages, you know, struggling to pay rent, trying to buy a house, and then to have this added cost on top of them, it can be very, you know, it can be very difficult to try.
There
and bear
can't
that.
Be that many people that will be able to scrape together 5,000 euro after tax or more, as you say.
Yeah.
You know, and then, as you say, you know, to be in a position where you might have to go back again and again.
Yeah. That's why a lot of couples do actually go abroad. You know, they might go to Prague or to Greece. But I just couldn't reconcile. It's difficult enough to go through as it is. You know,
to do it abroad without support.
Well.
Yeah.
You know, we've gone to scans and been told, no, sorry, we're going to have to cancel it this month. You know, your ovaries didn't respond properly. So I couldn't imagine hearing that in another country. You know, it's. You know, it's good to be near home and to be going through it, you know, with support at your side. So I'd imagine it's very difficult to go on a plane and go through that.
Can I just say, Laura, just Brian was explained to us like that he's a believer, he believes in God, maybe not so much in the church and the way they go about their business now, but that, you know, he really still will go back to the church and will. But would you be somebody who would have gone to Mass before up to now?
Be honest with you, I mean, I was raised a Catholic. I was raised in a very, you know, I suppose quite a Catholic household. But it's instances like this that I cannot reconcile with. It's hard to reconcile that kind of a message and. With, you know, and then to go, I feel like a bit of a hypocrite, to be honest with you, because I feel so vehemently against, you know, what they had to say. It just combined with, I suppose, you know, their track record, their recent history. But I don't think that diminishes myself as a good living person. I'm, you know, I consider myself a good, decent person. I don't think labelling myself as a Catholic, you know, adds anything to that, really.
Laura, would you stay on the line for me, Laura? Because I want to go to Rachel, who I think... thinks there are issues around couples who resort to IVF. Rachel, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie. Katie, oh dear, my phone is ringing. I just have to turn it off. Just a second.
Okay, grand.
Just a second.
Rachel is turning off the phone. Maybe somebody heard you were coming on the radio, Rachel.
Yeah. A very important point. A very important point, Katie, I think, is missed. I mean, as a result of IVF, supposing there are several babies, let's say four or five babies, and say the couple are looking just for one baby. So what happens to the rest of those babies then?
Okay, when you say, just to be careful of the language you're using, Rachel, when you say babies, you're talking about embryos that might be created in the IVF process.
That's right. So are they not potential babies? Yeah.
What happens in that situation is those embryos are frozen.
Yeah, sorry, that's Brian there coming back in. Thanks, Brian.
Okay,
So Rachel, no, I'll just let you explain your position there, Rachel.
Yeah. So okay, they may be frozen. So what happens? They can't be frozen for all eternity.
In time you can go back.
Brian, I prefer to speak to Kate, please, if you don't mind.
Okay, I'll bring you back in a moment, Brian. But yeah, Rachel, just explain your position.
Yeah. The situation is how I see it, is that it's human life that's being dealt with here, and I think it's my opinion. I don't think it's right, but then that's just my opinion. Just to decide to take or to use one embryo, and then the rest. What happens to the rest?
Can I come in there as well, Casey, if you don't mind?
Okay, well, Rachel, have you finished your point there, yeah?
Yeah, I have.
Okay, yes. Let's just hear. Well, first of all, Brian, you wanted to come in on that.
Yeah, so, look, embryos are frozen, and I suppose the majority of people, I can only speak from, you know, experience of what I've heard from other couples, that, you know, they may have one or two embryos frozen, and over time, when they want to have another child, they will go back, unfreeze the embryo, and have that embryo inserted, and... then it, obviously if it works out, it becomes a baby and so on. If not, they can go back again, you know, so...
Yeah, but if they're not all used, what happens to the ones that are not wanted?
Well, I think it's very rare that will ever happen, to be fair, you know.
Well, I mean, it has happened. I'm sure you must know that.
I suppose it kind of goes back to, you know, the chicken and the egg sort of situation, you know. And I suppose, you know, like... It depends. Medically, they will tell you that a baby is not alive until it has a heartbeat, you know. That's what they'll tell you medically, you know. So, but again, it depends on what your beliefs are.
Yeah. Anyway, I decided that, excuse me, as I have a very strong, belief in such things, that I would just... that I would let Katie know my opinion. It's just
I agree with that, and I'm not trying to just destroy anybody's beliefs or opinions. But I think, you know, I think if anybody was in my shoes, you know, they would do exactly what I did, or what we did as a couple, you know.
Yeah.
Can I just ask you, Rachel? I mean, you heard Brian's story there. You know, a heartbreaking story.
And I'm very pleased for him. Yeah.
And yeah, lovely, a happy ending. And Laura, you know, at the early stages of that journey, and you know, hopefully it'll end in a happy ending as well. But can you, if 'twas yourself or your daughter, and you were told that your only chance of having a child of your own would be to, you know, with the help of, with medical assistance, would you be able to put aside maybe your concerns about the ethical issues involved? And if you were told your only chance to have a baby?
Well, Katie, I from the very start of knowing about IVF, I just couldn't agree with it.
And is it purely this issue about the embryos that may be created that won't be used or implanted immediately?
Yeah, it is actually, yeah.
And is that because you believe that obviously, I suppose you must believe that life begins at the moment of conception then?
I believe it's the start of human life.
So even though you're talking about maybe five or six or eight cells that have they've come together, that's the infinitesimally small thing we're talking about here. You believe that is life and that is sacred?
I do, really, yeah.
And ultimately, you're saying that, and I know I heard what Brian was saying there about that it's rare enough that there would be a surplus cells that would, but or embryos. But I think we have to accept that it is part of the process. There are surplus embryos created in this process.
Yeah.
But the creation of a human life, a baby, the bringing of a family together that can be done only through IVF. You don't think that trumps the concerns you have, Rachel?
Well, at this moment, no, I don't think so. It wouldn't be for me, because I really have serious doubts about that, really.
Well, I can tell you unequivocally that, you know, standing in my sitting room now are two amazing children.
And I'm very pleased for you, Brian.
But I can tell you that, you know, if you're in my situation or in our situation, you would 100% do what has to be done.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, I'm sorry. No, that probably doesn't agree with what you believe.
No, it doesn't matter. I mean, of course, you're entitled to your opinion, the same as I'm entitled to mine.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Laura, you wanted to come back in there. Yeah. Thanks, Rachel. Thank you for that. Laura, you wanted to come back in.
Yes. Yeah. Just in relation to what Rachel was highlighting about, you know, what happens to the surplus embryos. I personally, you know, would want to donate my embryos if there were any left over. There is a clinic that allows you to donate embryos to couples if they wish to avail of that. So that is something.
Where is that clinic?
The Waterstone Clinic in Cork.
And that's a service they offer, that if couples have finished they have been successful and have completed their families, that you can then offer those embryos.
You can donate the embryos,
That obviously is one response to that issue, but I suppose it is an issue, and it does play on some people's minds. If you really believe that life begins at conception, you have created these potential lives, I suppose, if you put it that way.
Yeah.
And the question is, what happens to them?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I suppose I can only speak for myself as to what I would do. But it's there's so many nuances to it, as Brian said. You know that when you're going through the process, some can die naturally. You know, you might not be left with any embryos at all at the end of the treatment. You might store some for future siblings. As I said, you know, you could take the particular route of donating them. So I suppose it's really for every individual couple, you know, decide. But I can understand where she's coming from. But again, you know, we could delve into this in further detail and talk about, you know, when does life begin and so on. You know, does it need to have a heartbeat? So it's very difficult. And you know, when you're going through something like this, you know, all you want, you know, the baby, once it comes along, will want for absolutely nothing in this world. It'll be the most cherished and cared for individual. You know, we'll have a loving, stable home for that baby. So it's
and of course, the one thing that you know for absolute true is in all these cases where children have been conceived through IVF is these are wanted children, so wanted,
absolutely.
So longed
yeah.
for.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that as I said, he or she will want for absolutely nothing. So you'll be born in such a loving environment. And I mean, you know, the very tenets of Christianity are based on love and compassion, aren't they? And no couple should ever feel like pariahs for wanting and pursuing the means to have their own baby. So I think we need to give these couples the support that they badly need and just shake off the shackles of judgment, really. You know, they don't need to be they don't need to have this judgment and condemnation at a time when they're very vulnerable.
Indeed. Laura, thanks for that. 1850 715 815 is our Joe at rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Or Joe at rte.ie. Father Paddy Byrne, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie.
You're a priest in Abbey Leaks in County Laois, I believe.
That's right. And I was just listening to your debate there, conversation, and well done to the previous contributor. I suppose I'm coming up to 20 years in active ministry in the Catholic Church. And, you know, some of the most joyful baptisms. And of course, baptism is really a very important moment in our culture, even Catholicism in Ireland, where people have this important rite of passage and celebration of life. And I would say some of the most cherished memories of baptism that I've celebrated have been for couples who, as has been named on your programme, waited often for years and years, gone through a very often volatile journey of wanting and seeking and then going through IVF, some of them 3 and 4 times. And when this beautiful gift of life is given to them, it's a wonderful celebration. As when disappointment takes place, Katie, in ministry, mm-hmm. and many couples, you know, really live with a tremendous burden when this doesn't work out. So I think just very briefly, what happened in the beginning of this conversation in Tullamore was a big own goal. I think it's ludicrous. I think as a teaching in relation to our own Catholic theological conversation about IVF, it's relatively new. Really, we're looking at only at the last 40 years and 30 years for this gift to be brought into reality. And I think on the ground, I'm speaking the language of pragmatism and compassion, as named is the gospel value. So I really think, as a priest, just to say that, and I believe I speak in the mainstream with the vast, vast majority of colleagues, men and women in ministry, that, you know, this is a gift, it's an opportunity, and also to genuinely be considerate of couples who are listening, who are going through the process of IVF, and to genuinely, beginning a new year, pray blessing for them that the gift that they seek will be found in 2020.
Well, I'm sure that will be a great comfort and to your own parishioners and to people out there who are in this position, Father Byrne. But like I read out there a few paragraphs from the Irish Catholic, that's just from last April, where they were basically setting out the Catholic doctrine on IVF. And there seems to be quite clear that the Catholic teaching on IVF is that it is not permitted and that it offends the dignity of family and of life and all of that.
Well, again, you see, Katie, there's a great gap sometimes between the confines of the legalism in the black and white world and the reality of the grey zone where the vast majority of humanity is felt. And I think, again, there is a gap between the pastoral reality and the dogma. And I think that the two there, whilst not in conflict, obviously needs patience and time. But on the ground, I'm saying, Katie, mm-hmm. in the parish where I work in the diocese where I work in, and I believe in any diocese in the country and what Pope Francis would want in the world, that couples going through this, family members, even in my own family, that this is a huge moment in their lives. This is a decision that they have made because of a huge cost and burden. And I think it must be treated with the sensitivity and maturity and that empathy that we're, after all, we're still in the season of Christmas, of a very vulnerable child, born into a parents who certainly didn't fit into the mainstream. And I'm sure perhaps if the Irish Catholic were writing about it in terms of church doctrine at the time, this couple, Mary and Joseph, didn't really fit into the prescribed legalisms either. I don't get caught up, Katie. I think in a progressive Ireland that we live in a very fine island and good place where people are mature and make their choices, I think we must respect people where they find themselves to be, but particularly in terms of our gospel and our mission of service to people. And I know I speak on behalf of the vast majority in confidence, I say that. Compassion and kindness is key to how we include the people of God.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people would agree with you, and I'll let Brian back in with you as well. But just, does it this not put people like yourself, who are supposed to be, you know, teaching and leading your parishioners in Catholic teachings, it does not put you in a very difficult position? Because, as I say, I don't think there's any argument about what the official Vatican position and church position on IVF is as it stands. And, you know, that whoever put up that post for the Tullamore parish could just, you know, reasonably say, well, look, this is the position and I'm just telling my own people. I'm not going out there trying to dictate anyone else, but this is for my own parishioners and this is the current teaching on it. Does it not, like, if it's going to be whatever you interpret it yourself, is that not putting everyone in a grey zone?
I don't think so, because I think a grey zone actually is a fairly healthy place to be by and large. Life isn't black and white. But going back to my point...
That's
a
very un-Catholic thing to say, Father Byrne, if you don't mind me saying. Is that not what a lot of people would say is the problem with the a la carte Catholics?
I don't think so. And I certainly don't count myself as an a la carte Catholic. I think I count myself, number one, as a committed follower of Jesus Christ who's given full-time into ministry. And I think part of the problem in the Catholic Church in Ireland is perhaps for way too long we have lost not just our moral authority when it comes to a lot of issues, but we've lost our relevance in that. In my ministry, Katie, you know, dealing with the sick, the broken, often the bruised, dealing in the joys and the strengths of life in a lovely parish and in all the parishes I worked in, you know, church teaching and doctrine, the fundamental gift Christ asks us to do beginning a new year, it's a lovely resolution, is to love, is to be compassionate, is to, you know, err on the side of compassion. And I think in a world where I was delighted to hear Dermot Martin, Archbishop of Dublin, speaking in a world, particularly in the West, where, you know, we are into building walls, where, you know, legalism and doctrine can often alienate, and we can use our doctrine to indoctrinate a very sort of bigoted right-wing type of mentality where there's a little exclusive club and unless you tick the right boxes, you're not going to be part of that. And I think that isn't the type of church that the baby who we've just celebrated ever wanted to initiate. I think Jesus Christ is the God of the grey zones as opposed to the black and white.
Well, yes, on Christmas Day, Brian was very firmly told that if he didn't want to be seeking forgiveness, he shouldn't be sinning.
Well, I think that's own goal stuff. I know in the lovely place where I am and in many, many places across the country, there was a strong word of warmth and love and welcome, be you come one day in the year or whenever you come. And I think that's going back to the model of Jesus Christ. And I think, you know, if the church, and I believe it does have a future, we need to peel away and get back to the heart of it. And I finally say, Katie, for any couple out there today, because I've had lots of personal ministry with many, many lovely couples, discerning how the gift of life will be given to them, just genuinely to pray blessing for them and to please God hope that life will be realised for them in 2020.
Thank you for that, Father Paddy Byrne.
Thanks, Katie.
Brian, I'm sure that's a mass, man, you wouldn't mind going to mass
not,
to,
yeah,
to hear.
I think, to be fair, it's great to hear. And I think that the future of the Catholic Church lies in priests like himself, to be honest. And I know, look, I suppose there are always going to be, in all walks of life, there are going to be people who take, you know, what they want from, you know, the teachings. Like, obviously, that priest, you know, he that wrote that original post, he obviously, you know, that's what he thinks, that's what he feels.
But it's what the Vatican thinks and feels, yeah, as I understand it, Brian, isn't it? To be fair now, to...
I just think that, you know, look, you know, to put that on Facebook on the particular day that was in it, you know, and for people to read that on Christmas morning, the likes of Laura, for example, to read that on Christmas morning, who's going through a journey of IVF at the moment, really, you know, that it's just insensitive, really, to be honest, you know. But it's great to hear that priest, I don't know what, I forget his name, but, you know, to hear him speak like that gives me hope for the future of the Catholic Church, you know.
Yeah, because I think Father Pettibone, PP in Abbey Leaks, that we were talking to there.
So I think it's great to hear that, to be honest. And I think, you know, if the Catholic Church is to have a future in Ireland, I think that's the type of, you know, guidance we need.
Okay, 51551.